Welcome to our corner, where we talk about the Streets of Avalon role-playing game. I'm Chris.
And I'm Brett.
And today we're going to talk about religion in Avalon, how it's kind of a sham. Love
what?
Me a good sham.
So mean.
Here, man, look, there are no gods in Avalon. The gods are not real, they don't exist. Unless, of course, they do, and they're just hiding out on the planet. And then, even then, they're probably not very powerful. So that means religion's a sham, and those people that are in power use religion to control and make money off the weak-minded and the poor, in my opinion. That's how I feel about it. What about you, Brett? It's your setting.
It's a lot like that, yeah. Okay. So I talked about this a little bit a while back with the lamplighters, right, is that there's no gods. And I did that for a couple different reasons. One is that with Erlig, from the outside, in quote-unquote proper Avalon multiverse, there is no multiverse anymore. It's gone. It's black nothing, horror, Lovecraftian insanity outside, and then there's the planet, the realm that Avalon resides in.
And that should not, like, that is not a thing that generally touches the games that we are running.
Nope.
But it informs a lot of what's happening.
Yes, absolutely. Informs it is a very good way to say it. So magic is a thing that works in Avalon. It is effectively a natural occurring thing. It's a science.
And
figure it out.
And the way that we have it written, at least the way that I have it written right now, is that because of what has gone on out in the multiverse, like, it's just really hard to use magic now, which is why magic is so low powered and difficult compared to what it used to.
Correct. It's a thing, right? So it's like laws of physics. Things change, the chaos from the outside. Gravity's weird now. This is different. Horrible things are occurring. But so what happens, of course, is that people like to glom onto a thing. And magic being magic, historically speaking, Avalon's prehistory that's in my head and not written anywhere quite yet, or other than
we'll get to it eventually.
Yeah, is the
we'll talk about Thorbindor eventually.
Yeah.
Like we'll do some stuff on it.
As the dwarves, the true immortals, the elves, the secondborn, and as things start to work their way in and out, people, all the different cultures and stuff, begin to look at heroes and powerful people, ancestor worship, and so forth, as they treat them as gods. They treat them as a thing. Then people begin to rely on their belief, or like, oh, like, you know, back far enough, like great uncle so-and-so, call on his name, that always helps me. Next thing you know, you're talking about Thor. Next thing you know, you're talking about Poseidon, right? The Bargemen, similar in the way that they came up. And what happens is different approaches to magic, different approaches to a codified system of life living skills, right? Like, hey, you should do this type of thing. We are the Church of Poseidon. If you do this type of deal, you'll have really good fish catching, right? You'll have survived better on the water. This is awesome for you. If you're a warrior and a big fighter, you know, Koss would be great for you to worship. This is, you know, so on and so forth. The nobles love Odin because ancient, far back in the past, Odin was a founder of Avalon. You listen to all their doctrine. The world, the planet, Avalon itself, founded by Odin. There's absolutely some truth to the heroic nature of the person who did the thing. But they get glorified and transformed into gods.
Do you know what my favorite thing about all that stuff that you just said was?
What's that?
So, like, my head canon. And we'll see if this gets... I don't ever want to write or answer a lot of these questions.
It's all right.
Because you were mentioning a bunch of religious things from our world that shouldn't necessarily exist on this planet. It means that probably religions from other places, like even potentially gods or worshipers or whatever, that were escaping from the cosmic horror that out there, because we already know that the lamplighters showed up here, meant that they escaped here, and that's how some of these religious ideas got on this planet. It's so fun.
So this is where I loved when I was a kid looking at the original deities and demigods. Right.
Love that book. Blast. So much
looking
fun.
At all the different pieces. I have a copy of the old Cthulhu.
Oh, you got the one with the Cthulhu stuff inside of it? It's a good, great book to have.
Awesome. It's beat the shit, but I love it. And I looked at like Kali from the India myths and Shanghai Shen, which I use for the Bargemen, the myths out of Asia and stuff. And I love the hero components of it and the changing and the mutability of it. The mob of Kali is often seen, they act crazy, right? They're constantly in change and working and so forth. But there's a reason. We can get into this at a different time. But Kali's not from here.
Yeah,
this
right?
This is the followers, the believers, you know, when Kali came ages and ages and then landed type of thing, and this is what was left. They're trying their best to follow because they see the wisdom in what Kali was bringing, the change and so on. And I picked different components of different ancient polytheistic gods. And what Makes I sense. Wanted to do was I wanted to make sure I grabbed lots of stuff from different areas or a number of them that I thought were cool, right? Because I'm like, ooh, I like this stuff. I want to put it in my game. And I also wanted to make sure that I wasn't just like all Greek, all Norse, all whatever. And I've played with people that have said, hey, I think this would be a really cool god. We had Thoth from the Egyptian.
Yep.
From the Egyptian thing. Hermes shows up. One of the neat parts for me is that because it is a melting pot of all the different ideas and so forth within Avalon, whatever cult or god that you think would be fun will work. And this is a thing that Lankmar did this wonderfully. Fritz Leiber did a beautiful thing. He had the Street of the Gods. There were gods in Lankmar and gods of Lankmar. There were gods in Lankmar, like Isica the Jug and so forth. And on this road, they'd start by the one gate. And the more popular they got, they worked their way to the center of the city. Like you could like get a little piece of cobblestone here, a little extra chunk over here. You could move forward, move back as you're, you know, as you became more or less popular. And I love that visual and the idea of that, the story. And I thought, you know, in a major, in a massive city like this, when people are destitute, they need help. They're looking for a thing. They want to belong.
Yeah. Yeah.
Churches are effectively another type of guild. It's another place to be so you can exist. And a well-run church, a well-run cult, takes care of its people, whether that cult or church is taking care of anybody outside of its particular people or taking care of them, as the mob would say, is different.
Yeah. So these are just organizations that have that really are working with their values as the thing that they are selling, like a value and a set of cultural ideals and a community that they can bring together. It is definitely the idea of, in some ways, the little C church. So like not the big monolithic church, because this is in a city. More about like, what can this community of people band together and accomplish and like find out of life? And what are the values that go along with that? Church, cult, whatever.
Two of the largest would be the Temple of Odin, the Church of Odin, and the Lishe. So the Lishe are the old faith. These are the folks that have been supposedly around for a very, 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 very long time, forever and ever, right? This is the original, depending who you ask, faith of humanity. It's a druidic in its very basic nature, but a lot of what they have are those beliefs of like, hey, people should be buried. You shouldn't burn bodies. You should bury them. You should, these are the rites and rituals you should perform. We should put two copper coins, one on each eye. Why? Because that's what you do, because we have these rites, these rituals. Many of the reasons behind what they do and why they do it may well be lost to many of the population, but it's a thing you do. When I was a kid and how I was raised, there was a number of things like, why are we doing this? Well, that's just what you do on this holiday or this event. Like, oh, okay, why exactly?
Tradition's a thing, man.
Tradition's absolutely a thing.
Hey, folks, Chris here. I just wanted to jump in and say we are part of the Polygamers Podcast Network. And with that, there's some great shows in the Polygamers Podcast Network that you might want to listen to, like The Heroes of Havel's Way. Looking for an epic fantasy adventure between two best friends and their raccoon pal? Well, check out the D&D audio drama actual play, The Heroes of Havel's Way. Join Aramon, the Dreaming Paladin, and Odie, the Starlight Druid, as they travel the barony of Castakin to fight dirt. Join them as they battle the slurg monstrosities of Valhal Morse, the Titan of Earth. What? The raccoon? His name's Monty, he talks, and he loves baked goods.
The Odin Church, run and led by the magistrates, right? So it's a piece that the magistrates look at to help lend a bit of, you know, divine providence into that they're in charge. The nobles have this, they're all connected to Odin in one way or another, hence the half-elven ears and so forth. This is why we are chosen, we get to lead. The best thing that the folks in the church in the Temple of Odin do is there is a level of community that they bring, because when they show up, they often will support the griffins because like, oh, we're here to help you.
Sure. Right. That makes sense.
We're supposed to be part of this thing and so forth. And when they speak, they often speak with the authority of the magistrate houses themselves.
I mean, they are under the Wolfheart family, so.
Correct, yes. So they will speak with authority, and they are often used to help broker deals and resolve conflicts between other faiths. So when the Temple of Shanghai Shen and the Church of the House of Poseidon won a little turf war over stuff, or, you know, House of Poseidon got pissed at the bargemen and is threatening to light one of their barges on fire, Temple of Odin will come in, try to mitigate, have a discussion, calm things down. Now, from outside of the Great Walled City of Avalon, there's Crom Cruach. Crom Cruach is a one of my Secret of Kells. If you haven't watched the animated,
I haven't seen that. I should probably watch that. I love animated stuff. So
yes, it's awesome. And Crom Cruach is an old Celtic druidic deity, often seen as kind of dark version of nature, from what I have read. And what I have done with it is turn Crom Cruach into the darker form of Druidism. Makes sense. The Liche and the cult and worshippers of Crom Cruach are often at odds with each other.
Look, and when we're talking about Druids, we're not talking about like shape changing.
No.
I mean, yeah, that's not where we're going with this. They have some ability to manipulate elements and things like that. That's about the extent of what they can do.
So that goes right into what, you know, what's cool about it, other than like a belief system. So not every cleric, use D&D parlance, can cast spells. You could be a follower of the Liche. You could be a fanatical Hammerite. You could be a member of the House of Odin, a cultist of Erlig. You're doing this horrible killing every full moon in order to appease your horrible god. There's no god to appease. What you're doing is actually following this horrible ritual that allows magic to happen. You're just really bad at it. But those who figure out how to cast spells within the faith are usually pretty damn powerful. And those spellcasters are those that have been able to dig through the prayer books, dig through all the ancient texts and tomes, and effectively doing what the Order of the Eye is doing.
The Order of the Eye being the magic people.
Yeah, they're just doing it a little bit differently, a little different angle of attack. And they're doing it from a very ritualistic perspective, and everything from them is based on their faith. So when a member of House of Odin steps forward and heals somebody, or causes a magical calm to land upon an arguing crowd,
it's a magic spell.
It's a spell. It is absolutely a spell. It's seen as the power of the god, because why wouldn't it be seen as the power of the god, right?
Mm-hmm. To me, the best ones are the priests and the priests and clerics. I'm putting clerics in quotations. Are the priests and the clerics who don't realize that they're just casting a spell and they think it's actually a god that's giving them power. Yep. That's terrifying to me, but it's also fantastic. But I also love the idea that there are some priests out there, especially in some of these higher up, more powerful religions, that realize like, and we're just casting magic spells. Like our prayer books and whatnot, they're just books about magic.
It's spell books, right?
They just figured it out. Yeah.
They got it. Now, there are also those members of the various churches and cults and groups that are like, look, this is a really good way to get money. They will pray. They'll pray on the poor, they'll pray on the weak, and do their best to say, you need to give us your hard-earned coin so that we can, in turn, do this. Or give us your food, or your worship, or do what we say in some other way, if you do this, if you do that. Only the Liche, to date, in any of my campaigns anyway, I've never had a corrupted Liche run a game like that. I've had Liche become corrupted as an individual, but as a whole, it's not happened yet.
Yeah, they seem like the good guys.
Yeah, seem that way. That's because they haven't talked to, no one's yet gone to the forbidden section of the city and talked to the head of the Liche yet. So,
Who's that? I don't know anything about that person.
Yeah, we'll talk about that later.
This is that's a folio that's coming out at some point. Yeah.
Again, similar to the guilds, right? So when it comes to religion in Avalon, you have the opportunity to give all the good, the bad, and the indifferent that can come with religion in a big city.
Yeah.
People believe a thing, attend different services. The Liche, they have corpse carts where they go throughout the city, bring out your dead, Monty Python jokes apply, and they grab the poor folk from the alleyways. People bring them the dead. They bury them in every neighborhood has at least one Liche graveyard.
Mm-hmm.
They know just about everybody in the neighborhood. They can't not, because they're constantly traveling. People treat Liche with great respect, usually, and they know everybody. Other members of other churches, of course, their flock, the people they know lots of people. They have influence. And when, if you need something as a character, or again, going back to like our guild discussion, if the followers of Koss are struggling because they're having an issue with this guild is shorting them or demanding some protection money from them, or they're in trouble with the magistrates, or they had to borrow money from the moneylenders. Now I've got a moneylenders guild and the religion aspect. The two are at loggerheads. We got to figure out how to solve this.
It's not really any different than two guilds being at loggerheads.
Nope, exactly. I have had one of the first campaigns. It was a short campaign I ran ages back, and it was looking for the Eye of Odin. I have a religion. It was a religious ceremony where it was all about this great eye. And it was just a weird glowy gem that was in a lantern. And it became a holiday. People roamed around looking for this thing. It was a holiday for Avalon and so forth. And the character, it went missing. Like from the church, it was supposed to be this like walk around. Oh, we can't find it. We come back to the temple, and oh, there it is. Wonderful, magical, mystical. It was very, very ritual.
Yeah, sure.
Pre-planned event. But they come back and like, oh my God, it's gone. Somebody nicked it. This is not good. And the church was trying to cover it up, and they found these troubleshooters. Like, look, we need you to solve this. Oh my God, we can't be involved. Here's a bunch of coin. Go figure.
It's like imagine somebody nicking the cup of Christ from the Vatican's like,
yeah, not gonna go
actual
well.
Ceremony, right? Like, it sounds like what you just described.
Yeah, it's not good, right? If you walk into pick your religious building of choice, and the thing is missing. The book, the chalice, the artifact, whatever it is. So the other thing that happens is that these folks will often need to obtain things. Like, hey, there's an old church that got buried. We found out where it was because Avalon's built on more Avalon.
Pretty fun.
I could really use you to go down there and find the MacGuffin. Please do that. Or it's a piece that you really got to have. I used the box, which had a Shoggoth in it. As a MacGuffin, but it is a
shaking my head for the audio people out there. I'm just shaking my head at Brett, like the stupid box. So just well, carry, have the box. It's great. It's super powerful. It'll just murder everybody if you keep it open for too long, and everybody wants it. And we can't give it to anybody because we're gonna get murdered. Like, you're the worst sometimes. It's fine.
But the cult of Erlig sees that as a really cool thing, right? That's a direct line to one of the mouths of Erlig, which is a horrible amorphous blob. The other thing that religions will be interested in is, of course, the past. Things of previous glories from followers of faith, family members, and so forth. I guess all the different things that you've ever done in any traditional D&D game to like do X for the church all absolutely apply. We're in a small, confined space. Generally speaking, one of the things that'll happen is players will ask me, well, I, player, know that there are no gods. Does my character know that? My explanation to people, and you can do this if you choose to or not, is that if your character ever figures that out, would anyone believe them?
No.
Or could they stay sane?
I feel like they'd probably be able to stay sane for the most part, but only the other people that had figured it out would. This is for me, right? This is what my game would be.
Yeah.
Only the other people who had already figured it out would believe them and be like, you got to stop saying that out loud. You're going to cause riots in the streets or get, strung up yourself.
Yeah, you want to get lynched? That's a good way to get lynched. The reason I brought up the would you stay sane is because in one campaign I ran, two characters figured it out because of Erlig. They learned a horrible truth about the universe and all that is outside, and it broke them. They're like, that, I can't, no. And that was enough. They're like, done, out.
Yeah, man, I gave somebody a permanent condition. So that's basically one of their condition tracks just filled for almost ever. It's like, you know the truth of the world.
That's a burden, man.
That's a burden. Yeah, you're just one, like your nihilism now has just put you one step closer to death. That's all.
That can be tricky.
So I guess it is losing your mind a little bit. So little bit. I guess I did.
But the thing is, does everybody follow every religion 100%? Absolutely not. Absolutely does? Not. You know, it's just the way it works. And the city has these different pieces and parts. At its most basic, people within the city need groups. They need ways to congregate together, make their lives better. Find a reason, excuse, path, whatever you want to call it, to either live their lives better, do the right thing, so hopefully something gets better. They want a system.
Makes
they
sense.
They want something to latch onto to help them.
That's what religion does for people, right?
It absolutely does.
That's what community does for people. That's what organizations do for you. They give them a place to belong. Mm-hmm. Tribalism's a real thing.
Now, if, as we alluded to, if you decide, you know what, Odin's real. Okay.
You know, I wanted to throw that out there. Like, So, like, to me, the perfect version of the idea that gods are kind of like around is that they're not gods anymore. They're like demigods or depowered because they just don't have it, what they had before from wherever they came from. Because I don't think a lot of them are from here.
There is a certain guy who runs a fighting school named Haleth.
Love me some Haleth.
Yeah. Yeah. If you ask the right person about Haleth, i.e. either Lenny or Beta's characters, Newton Beecher, who Haleth really is, at least in Brett's game, they'd be like, oh, him? You mean Odin?
Yeah, right?
Yeah. Because he's old. Really old.
Like, immortal
old. Like, holy crap.
Like, they're at the fall of Thorbrandor old.
Yeah, he was this. He described himself once as being cursed to the bone, where he just couldn't die. But again, that's not a requirement. From the way it's set is the gods, even if you have them exist, they exist as debuffed, depowered, nerfed, pick your phrase.
And they're more living in that demigod space.
Mm-hmm.
They're basically level 10, level 11, which I don't have a level 11 characters.
And if you think about what we talked about with the Lamplighters, they know things. From a nihilistic, this is it, this is the end. We can last. I can't necessarily win. How much would such a being want to do? Really?
Really?
No. How many of them would be a little more relaxed insofar as like, look, I'm just trying to live I'm just trying to hang out.
Man. Just trying to live my retired existence here.
Exactly. On the other side, though, like I say, one of the fun parts that I have in Avalon, at least I'm trying to get this across a few episodes here, is that those wonderful bright lights turn one on and the shadows go away for that instant. You get that person. They stand up and that Lichay does something. And everybody goes, I remember why we're here. I remember why we're good people.
Just a little bit of hope, right?
Just a little bit of hope. And sometimes that comes from, you know, you decide that, hey, Poseidon does something. Kali does something. You could do that.
Or the characters inspired Poseidon or Kali to do
something.
Correct. Which is the better version of that, in my opinion. Yeah.
They're not going to, these beings, whatever's left of them, they're not going to do this on their own. They need a little kick in the pants. If you have to watch that Adventure Time episode where Finn gets his hero, Billy, to get off his ass and be a hero again.
So good, right?
It'll help you out.
I love Adventure Time. What a great show. What a great reference drop.
Thanks, man.
Well, I think that's I think that wraps up religion, at least for now.
Yeah, I want it to be open-ended, man. You know, so you could do a little bit with it. I wanted to lay the groundwork to say, hey, look, this is the deal.
Yeah.
If you play within that bumper, you're doing, quote unquote, doing it right for Avalon.
We'll give you the stuff. We'll let you play with it how you want to. That's the whole idea, is just giving you pieces to build your own Lego blocks.
Absolutely.
Giving your own Lego, giving you Lego blocks to build your own sets with. That's all.
Exactly.
Thank you for listening to Under the Lamplight, the Streets of Avalon role-playing game podcast. If you enjoyed the show, please follow or subscribe and give us a rating on whatever podcatcher you listen to this on. You can pick up the playtest version of the game, which I've done my best to give a slightly nicer layout to with some art, at polygamero.us. The link is in the episode description.